definitely the best. In fact, when I knew he was going to be on, I'm like, I looked to our producer, Paul Brennan, we're going to do two blocks, right? We better. And we are. Paul was way ahead of me. Amazon, Apple, Facebook, and Google. This is what we're going to talk about because we do it several times a day easily. And for most of us, we interact with those companies on a daily basis. Scott Galloway is the best, and he's back with us. He has studied these four companies. He's written a book about them. It's called The Four, The Hidden DNA of Amazon, Apple, Facebook, and Google. It's been updated. It's put out on Facebook. You should read it, buy it, read it. Scott, of course, professor of marketing at the NYU Stern School of Business. Nice to have you here in studio.
Carol, thanks so much. I'm sitting here. You can't see it. I'm sitting here smiling. All I remember is the best. Thank you for that. That was
Score.
Really nice.
But you are. And yeah.
Go on. Go on, Carol.
Stop. Don't stop. Yeah, I got it.
Stop. Tell me more.
This has been an interesting week. So much stuff going on. But we kicked it off with, you know, the hearings with Jack Dorsey and Sheryl Sandberg back up on Capitol Hill. What's the future of these social media companies?
In terms of regulation, let me go from a shareholder standpoint. I think they only get more and more valuable. If you look at their relative valuations, maybe with the exception of Amazon, they look cheap. Facebook's trading at a forward multiple on earnings of about 21. The S&P trades at 18 or 19. The S&P grows its top line 4-6%. Facebook, even with its recast revenues, is going to grow 30%. So I think they're fantastic investments. I think from a consumer level, they continue to innovate and be great at what they do. If you want to see how powerful Facebook is, go on and try and advertise, and you find you can target households in New Jersey who have teenagers that just got their driver's license, and you really start to see why this company is making so much money. So from a shareholder perspective, I think they continue to do well. From a what I'll call citizenry or well-being of the Commonwealth, I think they continue to do substantial damage. I think that if a company doesn't put in place the safeguards, the requisite safeguards such that its ad unit can be weaponized by the intelligence arm of a foreign government, I think almost any other company in the world or any individual in the world running that group, I think the company would be put out of business and that person would probably be on trial. Mm-hmm. But as we no longer worship at the altar of innovation and character, we worship at the altar of shareholder value and innovators. These companies get the mother of all hall pass. And because their technologies are difficult to understand, because they're our heroes, we have the perfect storm of bad things where we're sort of unable to do what we've done with every other industry. And that is with your industry, we regulated you. Carol, if you said something, if you started saying mean things about me that had no basis, I could sue you. Yeah. These companies are exempt from that.
That's interesting that you say that, right? What was the story we did in Bloomberg Business Week? Was it last week with Sarah Friar that some have been said that something like Twitter, stopping a social media company, it's not what you are. You're actually a media company.
Right. Oh, yeah.
And just take a position and just run with it.
Well, at a minimum, we talk about regulation. Why shouldn't they be subject to the same scrutiny that you are?
Yeah.
Well, and you, if I have it right, I mean, you served on the board of the New York Times Company. I mean, you know this from the inside out. So what happens? Is there, especially given all the politics we're hearing, Sheryl Sandberg, Jack Dorsey up on Capitol Hill, will that change going forward? Are we looking at a future with more regulation potentially of these companies?
I don't think so. I think DC lacks the will or the IQ to go after big tech. I think they're outgunned. Amazon has 88 full-time lobbyists. I think when the White House makes his ham-handed attacks on big tech, he unwittingly inoculates them because these attacks lack reason. They lack logic. It's just not true that these companies have a bias towards the liberal side. They don't lean left. They don't lean right. They lean down. They will do anything to get more clicks and sell more Nissan ads.
Google didn't even show up.
Yesterday was the same day where the best and the worst brand moves of 2018 were committed by a company. And the worst brand move, the dumbest move in corporate America for 2018 was Google not finding the time to send either Sundar, Larry, or Sergey. And that image of the nameplate without
the empty chair,
without Google. And how can Google ignore the Senate? It comes down to one number, 93% market share. They've decided they can ignore our elected officials. That was probably one of the stupidest things they could have done. These guys all have private jets. One of them could have got to Washington. And it was a gift to Facebook and Twitter because everybody went after Google.
Scott, what were they thinking? Is this just Silicon Valley being so far removed from Washington and not getting it or what?
I have no idea. I don't know what Google is thinking. I don't think they were thinking, but Facebook and Twitter, I thought, did well. I thought it was a more substantive conversation than the last one, but nothing will come of it.
Right.
You don't have, any regulation against these guys, you ask what the future is, it is going to happen, but it's going to come out of Brussels. Like the major conflicts of the 20th century, the war against big tech is going to break out in continental Europe. They register all of the downside, the job destruction, the tax avoidance, the weaponization of their elections, with a fraction of the upside. They're running university buildings or hospital wings named after Google or Facebook billionaires in Europe. Mm-hmm. This is stiffen the backbone of the EU Competitive Commissioner, Margrethe Vestager. We also might see it come out of a red state, where an attorney general in a red state sees that the fastest blue line path to the governor's mansion is to foment a populist argument against big tech, similar to what happened to tobacco.
Yeah.
DC is just outgunned here, just outgunned.
Well, I got to ask you, and in about 30 seconds, then we're going to come back with you in a few minutes. But in terms of Dorsey and Sandberg, who did better in your estimation?
I thought Dorsey came across as very thoughtful. And when he said some things that I thought were very powerful. He said, we need to be open to a tectonic shift in our business model. And he said, we also need to acknowledge that every time someone opens our app, we are incenting them to do something. And I thought that was very powerful. Meanwhile, his stock went down 4% when he said that. I think Sheryl Sandberg is incredibly talented. I think she's an impressive person. But I find that Ms. Sandberg comes off like a politician. And then I do an imitation of her. We need to do better. Strong action. Mark and I are sorry. We need to do better. Peace out.
Scott Galloway, professor of marketing at the NYU Stern School of Business, author of The Four, The Hidden DNA of Amazon, Apple, Facebook, and Google. All right, Scott. So before we went to break, you told us about the worst brand move of 2018, but also the best happened yesterday.
Yeah, the best, in my opinion, the kind of the best, boldest, most shareholder-driven single decision by a brand in 2018 was Nike's decision to pick Colin Kaepernick as their face of their 30th anniversary.
Why?
Well, if there's one athlete every brand wishes they had their logo on, it was Muhammad Ali. And I think history is going to look favorably on Mr. Kaepernick because we don't judge people based on their beliefs. We judge them based on their conviction. And I believe he, regardless of whether you think he's right or wrong, he has paid a pretty significant price. Also, there's the qualitative and there's the quantitative. And I think Nike did the math here. Nike, let's break their numbers down. $35 billion in revenue, $15 billion domestically, $20 abroad. Within the U.S., two-thirds of their revenue come from people under the age of 35. If you're under the age of 35 and spending $120 on Flyknit shoes, it's probably safe to say you're urban dweller, decent amount of disposable income, which means you absolutely skew progressive. So I think in the U.S. they put at risk somewhere between $1 to $3 billion of what I'll call red state conservative money. And then outside, internationally, does anyone abroad think the U.S. is addressing these issues well?
No.
So in exchange for putting at risk through $1 to $3 billion of their revenues, they solidified and deepened the relationship with $32 billion of their business. This was the gangster business move of 2018. This was genius.
We did a story earlier. I mentioned that Nike's exposure from that ad is up to about $163 million.
Everyone's talking about it. Yeah, you got to say, if you want to be a brand like Nike, you got to be willing to alienate people such that you say something. If you're not, you know, it's like anything else. If you're not occasionally, I get negative. You know, I hate it when people don't love me on Twitter and they say mean things about me. I'd like to say, oh, it doesn't bother me. It does bother me. And someone reminded me, if you don't upset people, it doesn't mean you're saying anything. And Nike went out and said something yesterday. I think it's going to pay off hugely for them.
It is interesting to watch the ad too, and their ability to kind of synthesize a lot of athletes beyond the controversial athletes, you know, non-controversial athletes, you know, these people who are achieving a lot of great things, you know, this player who's starting in the NFL this weekend, only has, you know, one of his hands amputated when he was a child and, you know, is now playing professional football. I mean, it's very, the ad itself, even setting the Kaepernick piece aside, it's very powerful.
It is. It's a great ad, but we come to expect that from Nike. Right. They've done a great job. Anyways, best brand move of the year, Nike.
Yeah, something refreshing in a place where I feel like people don't take a stand right now. Or I don't know, or companies are so afraid to.
They're being forced to.
Yeah.
And kind of the last bastion that we were safe from politics with sports, and it's been politicized. So it's very difficult for them to stay out.
That was an earlier conversation. We were talking about the NFL and President Trump. This is an update on your book, paperback version, just coming out here. Yeah. What's different? What did you add?
I added a chapter, basically. So this book, Carol, started as sort of a love letter. I love these companies. I own their stocks. I work with them or worked with them until I started saying they should be broken up. And Amazon's the largest recruiter out of my class. I'll hire 15 students from my class this year. I think they're fantastic. I'm a huge admirer. Spent 2 years studying them, and by the end of the book, it transition from a love letter to a cautionary tale. And the chapter I've added is I believe these companies need to be broken up. I think the market is at a natural point in the economic cycle where it needs to be oxygenated, the same thing we did with Ma Bell, the same thing we did with the railroads. I don't think they're evil. I don't think they've done anything wrong. Their job is to pursue profits kind of at all costs, but our job is to elect people that hold them accountable and ensure that we can sustain a middle class with fairness and wage growth and opportunities for small business. New business formation has been cut in half the last 40 years. You would think this is an era of innovation. There were more new businesses being started every day when Jimmy Carter was president. Hmm. The concentration of wealth and power among these tech companies has, in my view, is making it difficult for small companies to get out of the crib and prematurely euthanizing big companies that tend to be better employers and better taxpayers. So the last chapter is an argument for how, or if and how, we should break these guys up.
You think it'll happen?
No, I don't. I think it can. I think the world, I don't think, I'm not bereft and just resigned. I think the world is what we make of it. I'm going to Washington next week and meeting with two different senators to talk about it. But I think DOJ action would be the best thing here. I don't see it coming anytime soon. I was heartened by Jeff Sessions yesterday, who said that he's urging the DOJ to look at their anti-competitive practices. But then they went and kind of messed it up and said, and we're also going to look at whether or not they're stifling conservative views. So they have found a way to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory, because they will make this ridiculously lame argument that Google, Facebook, and Twitter lean left. They don't. They don't lean left. They don't lean right. They lean down. They will do anything that gets more clicks and more Nissan ads.
Right.
When they walk into work, they're not Democrats. They're not Republicans. These people are capitalists, full stop. And that will end up, in my opinion, probably contaminating the entire argument, and it'll go nowhere. And it's a shame, because antitrust could have been a bipartisan issue. This is something we can all rally around, that it makes sense to have more jobs, more tax base, more competition. And unfortunately, I think they're gonna mess this up.
As we started, you are the best. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Carol.
Yeah.
You're the best for saying that.
Scott Galloway. Check out his book, everybody. The Four, the Hidden DNA of Amazon, Apple, Facebook, and Google. Of course, professor of marketing at the NYU Stern School of Business.